Welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists and opinion makers that bridge our two worlds. My name's Chad O'Carroll and I'll be your host today. With North Korea announcing to the world that it will be attempting to launch a satellite between December 10th and 22nd, many analysts have been speculating as to why Pyongyang is so keen to try another rocket launch just months after the previous one ended in failure. What makes it all the harder to understand is the fact that South Korean presidential elections are just around the corner, scheduled to take place in the very window that Pyongyang warns it will launch its rocket. To help make sense of the current situation on the peninsula, KEI caught up with Mark Fitzpatrick, a non-proliferation and disarmament expert from the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Having written extensively on North Korea's WMD programs, worked for over 25 years at the State Department, and now serving as the IISS Director of Non-Proliferation and Disarmament, Fitzpatrick is one of the leading analysts on North Korean affairs. I caught up with Mark by Skype while he was in Bahrain and started by asking him why he thought North Korea was launching another rocket so soon after the failure of the last one.
I think North Korea is determined to display to its own population that it is a strong and prosperous nation, the goal that it set for itself for 2012, some years ago. And having failed to get a satellite into orbit in April, they're trying again before the year is out. The fact that the launch date comes at a time when it could complicate the South Korean presidential election is icing on the cake for North Korea. The primary audience is the population of that northern part of the peninsula.
So the fact that it's taking place near to the election, do you think that could have an impact on the South Korean election itself, or do you think it's unlikely to really have much of a role?
I'm not sure how it's going to play in South Korea. At the time of the attack on the Chonan Corvette in 2010, it appeared to create a sense in the South Korean public of concern about being too hawkish toward North Korea. And it appears that the progressive parties did better as a result. But the attitudes toward North Korea changed later that year with the attack on Yongbyon Island. And I'm not sure that another North Korean provocation now would cause the South Korean electorate to lean to the left. I think they might just lean more to the right and choose the candidate who is seen as strongest in standing up to North Korean provocations.
And that might be confusing for some, because a lot of people would have thought that North Korea would prefer a more progressive candidate in power in South Korea. So in some ways, you might say this rocket launch is a bit of an own goal in terms of trying to promote the progressives in South Korea. Do you think that the domestic imperatives are so strong to achieve this strong and prosperous state that it really doesn't matter to them who wins in South Korea?
Yes, I think North Korea is just very much inwardly focused. The satellite launch is being timed to coincide with the first anniversary of Kim Jong-il's death. And the fact that that occurs right before the South Korean election is a circumstance in terms of the North Korean decision making.
So you think there'd probably be no way that either candidate might be able to persuade North Korea not to go ahead with this?
Oh, I don't think North Korea is going to be dissuaded from going ahead with this. Certainly not by either of the South Korean candidates. The voice that could be strongest in dissuading North Korea is that of China. And obviously that voice has failed. With North Korea having announced the launch, I don't see any prospect of them now turning back from it. Now it's a matter of face, but they might lose face again if the launch resembles what happened in April 13th, and it is another disaster.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. So far, it doesn't look like North Korea has invited the same international media presence as it did before. Do you think, as a result of that, they might just call it a victory regardless?
Well, North Korea has done that in the past. They've declared that they have two satellites in orbit, and the rest of the world hasn't seen any trace of such satellites at all, and knows that those previous launches were not successes. So I think, you know, it may depend on whether the second stage successfully separates from the first stage. By that time, North Korea might declare it a success. But if it happens within 2 minutes of the launch, as was the case in April, I don't see how they could say it was a success. I think it'll be pretty evident from all the news coverage around the world that it was another failure, if that indeed is the case.
Yeah. And I mean, I wonder if the engineers are confident about this launch, or if like you said, this just urgent push to commemorate Kim Jong-il and celebrate the strong and prosperous nation is trumping even what engineers might be saying. Do you think that the time window we've seen since the last launch is really enough for North Korea to have improved on the existing Unha 3 design to the point where they can be more confident, or it's too short a period?
I'm not totally confident in whether or not it's been sufficient time. I suspect that it has not been sufficient time for North Korea's rocket scientists to have analyzed what went wrong in April and fixed it. You know, maybe an advanced nation that has a lot of experience with testing rockets would be able to make the calculations and the adjustments in time, but North Korea's very limited experience in sending up rockets and missiles, and the long periods of time between the different launches suggest that the what is it now, eight-month period is really not sufficient for engineers to be able to look the leaders in the face and say, we're confident it'll be successful this time. I don't think they could have that level of confidence.
But we've seen reports just yesterday on Arms Control Wonk, for example, about a core of Iranian engineers who are now permanently based in North Korea. Do you think are there enough similarities between Iran's ballistic missile program and that of North Korea such that an Iranian technical presence could actually help? Because of course Iran's been successful with some of these satellite launches while North Korea hasn't.
I think there's enough similarity between the two programs that sharing of information, sharing of data and test results, and having some experts on hand would be helpful. But it's important not to overemphasize the degree of similarity between the two programs. For example, the baby bottle shaped Shahab 3 missile that Iran tested seemed to have showed up in North Korea in Pyongyang in the parade in October 2010. But closer examination of the body of the missile shows that there are fins on one and not fins on the other, and some other differences. So they're not identical missiles. It's not that North Korea is testing an Iranian missile, or that Iran tested a North Korean missile, as has been claimed by some so-called experts. And I'm not confident either of these reports of Iranian engineers being stationed in North Korea for periods of time. Whether these are true or not, I think we have to take with some degree of skepticism. They probably are true, but I, you know, until we get conclusive evidence, I think it's best to just take it with a bit of a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the sort of geopolitical impact will be if North Korea's satellite actually does get a satellite into orbit that does start broadcasting revolutionary pains about Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung? What will be the impact of that, in particular for diplomatic efforts to denuclearize in North Korea and so on?
Well, I think the people of the world are not going to rise up in revolutionary fervor because they hear the patriotic hymns. But, you know, the impact of a North Korean launch on the diplomacy and on the strategic relationships isn't going to differ too much depending on whether the launch is successful or not successful. I mean, it's the launch itself in violation of the Security Council resolutions that put North Korea in the penalty box and further reduced the prospects of any reconciliation between North and South Korea and between North Korea and the United States. I think at some point, the United States under President Obama would be willing to try again at diplomacy, at engagement. But having been slapped in the face this past March makes them very wary of extending an olive branch again. And this test, this rocket launch this time is going to harden the attitudes in Washington and certainly won't make Tokyo or Seoul any more willing to display a sense of forgiveness toward North Korea. They put themselves in the penalty box.
But while during the agreed framework and six-party talks, there was some enthusiasm, it seemed, from North Korea to be engaging in a relatively productive way with the United States and South Korea. Does this second test and, you know, behavior over the past few months suggest to you that they really don't care and they really don't even, they're not even looking for engagement with the US or South Korea in any productive, constructive way?
Well, I wouldn't say that exactly. I think that North Korea does want a productive relationship with the United States. They do worry about being at odds with the world superpower. They do worry about what they see as the potential for an American invasion, as improbable as that sounds to anybody who's not in North Korea. So they do have an impulse to want to have better relations with the United States. They want a peace treaty, and they want to be left alone, as it were. But that impulse is wholly overridden by the impulse to demonstrate strength. Military first is not just a slogan in North Korea. It's a fundamental philosophical way of living. And that if that requires the foreign policy impulses to be overridden, it'll be overridden in a flash.
Interesting. And do you think the South Korean narrow satellite program is at all on North Korea's mind? Do you think that the recent efforts for launching that successfully might have added extra impetus? Is there a Korean space race?
I think that may be an additional impulse. You know, in almost every field of endeavor, South Korea is leagues ahead of the North. Economically, of course, in every field of science, biotechnology, in culture, soft culture, the only thing that the North has done better, as it were, than South Korea is to build a nuclear arsenal and to build and test long-range missiles. And the space program is then one of the areas where the North would like to be ahead. And if South Korea were to have a successful space launch before North Korea, that would upset this sense that the North has something that they can lord over the South. And so I think that was another motivation for the North to go ahead with this launch, probably before the engineers could be certain that it would work.
And of course, South Korean President Kim Dae-jung launched the space program in South Korea following the first Taepodong-1 launch in 1998. There was obviously a very clear link, therefore, to the North Korean program. Do you think the South Korean program is also being pushed in some way by beating North Korea to the first successful satellite launch?
I'm sure that there is some sense in South Korea of a competition with the North in this regard. But South Korea has a far greater economic and technical rationale for a space program. South Korea's space program makes sense. North Korea's doesn't make any sense except as a strategic form of projecting power. South Korea's makes sense in terms of the technological progress of the nation and all the weather observation and communications purposes served by a space program.
We're presumably going to see some more United Nations Security Council condemnation after this. Do you think that this could lead to a worsening of tension, an increase in tensions on the peninsula, perhaps another nuclear test some way down the line?
Yes, unfortunately, I think it's all too predictable what will now be the course of events. The Security Council will condemn the rocket launch. North Korea will respond with a sense of being aggravated and will then use that as an excuse, probably to test a third nuclear device. That's been the pattern, and North Korea, if anything, is known for sticking to patterns. I think another way, though, that the Security Council will respond will be by slapping additional sanctions on North Korea. Maybe not additional measures, but additional entities will be added to the blacklist. You'll remember last April, the United States, Japan, and South Korea wanted to add about 40 different North Korean entities to the list of designated companies and individuals. And China would not allow any but three of them to be added. I suspect this time China will be miffed enough to add a few more. But then the United States, Japan, and South Korea will probably take additional measures of their own to put some financial measures in place against North Korea, maybe seeking to freeze some North Korean bank accounts overseas the way they did in 2005 with Banco Delta Asia. At that time, the freezing of Banco Delta Asia also led to an escalation in tension and was a contributing factor to North Korea's nuclear test. But I don't think the United States will be deterred from taking measures, because North Korea is probably going to test a third device anyway.
And in that respect, what would you suggest is the best way forward? Would it be what you've just described?
You know, I can't fault the policy of the U.S. government and its Asian allies to maintain a steady hand, not to be a quickly changing policy, to try to hold North Korea to its international obligations, and when they fail, to sanction them, to improve interdiction policies, so that if North Korea were to try to ship any nuclear weapons components or fission material elsewhere, that it would be interdicted, and to keep trying to bring China into this community of nations that is concerned enough about North Korea's provocations to take steps, legal steps, through sanctions and interdictions and so forth, to keep it bottled up. Meanwhile, I think the United States has been keeping open channels of communication with North Korea, and the prospect for engagement and for better relations if North Korea seriously is willing to take the hand of friendship. It's just that having had that hand slapped so recently, though, I don't see how one can advocate that the United States should bend over backwards and offer concessions. It's just not politically palatable in Washington.
Great. That's fantastic, Mark. Thanks very much for joining us today for this podcast.
Okay. You're welcome.
I do hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can download other episodes at our podcast website, which you can find at keia.podbean.com. That's keia.podbean.com. We'd also really appreciate if you could leave us some feedback using the comment system on either the Podbean website or directly on our iTunes page. If you'd like to suggest a candidate or topic for a future episode, be sure to drop me an email at ocarroll@keia.org. That's ocarroll@keia.org. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you can join us next time.